necessary task of visiting the dentist. It was long overdue. I had to get a tooth pulled out because I'm still too much of a cheapskate to get my teeth fixed. I've already had a couple pulled out for the same reason, and at 33 I don't really want to lose any more if I can help it. So while I was there, I got the dentist to check the rest of them out to see if there's anything that needed attention so I can save myself a bit there. It wasn't too bad. But one thing that he told me that was quite a surprise to me, he said that I've got a bit of minor damage, nothing too bad, a bit of minor damage at the tops of my teeth that's been caused from me grinding my teeth. I was a bit taken aback by this. I was never aware that I ever did that. But since that visit, I've become quite aware of it. I notice it all the time now. I seem to clench my teeth a lot. And it really annoys me now that I'm aware of it. But from that, I've come to realize, and it concerns me a bit, that I must be carrying a lot of tension with me a lot of the time. And a lot of tension that I was never aware of before I went to the dentist of all places. I said to Sarah a few days after the visit, I said, I don't really like this, what it says about me. I think maybe I need to start learning how to let some things go sometimes. She let out a bit of a knowing laugh, as if to say, you think? And obviously she was aware of something I wasn't, but I have to concede, I guess I know what she means. But I wasn't always like this, I'm sure of it. Not that I had it all together before, but thinking back, I reckon I've probably become more tense with things since the time where I actually thought I was starting to get it together, or we were starting to get it together. About 6 or 7 years ago, when we first came into the church, actually, the biggest change that God brought to our lives was in bringing us out of a trap where our lives were consumed by a lot of heavy drinking in our lives. And we notice a lot of things today that make us very grateful to have broken free of that cycle that we seem to be stuck in there. I don't ever really see us returning to that sort of thing, but Sarah said something the other day that I found quite interesting. She said that sometimes it feels like we got rid of one burden in our lives only to replace it with other burdens that seem to consume us now, new ones. Though we didn't like where our lives were heading back then, in many ways our lives were pretty worry-free in those days. And since coming out of that, we do now like and appreciate the direction that our lives seem to be heading now. We feel like we're making a much better lives for ourselves and our family, even a home for our family. And we really feel like we're both probably heading towards something in our vocations too, which it feels good. But with all that, there's a lot of pressures that come with that too. The pressure to maintain that, and the pressures to even move further ahead in those things. It's those sort of things, I'd say, are probably contributing a lot to that tension that I now seem to be carrying around with me, but I was hardly aware of before. Like I said, I thought I was doing pretty well now, until I went to the dentist. And it just goes to show, but I think, just how easy it is to become trapped in things, in something or various things, without even realizing it. As Peter said in that passage that we heard from Eric, he says, you are a slave to whatever it is that controls you. But sometimes we might not even be aware of what it is that's controlling us at the time. So we're going to look at a bit of that today, recognizing the traps that we might be falling into, that we might not be aware of, becoming aware of those things that are controlling us and taking away the freedom that God wants for us. Because freedom is important. It's an essential part of what goes into the life that God gives and wants us to have. The life that God insists that we have. Freedom is something worth protecting. It's something I'd say we probably need to be more intentional than we realize sometimes about protecting. So look at this passage in 2 Peter, a passage, as we heard, that doesn't have a lot that sounded all that pleasant in it. And it doesn't get any better in what comes before that in the rest of the chapter in this letter. This is the middle section of Peter's letter to the church or churches that he's writing to. We started last week with something out of the first chapter there, and we'll continue on next week with the third chapter. But Peter's focus here is based squarely on those he believes are leading the people astray. False teachers, he refers to them as. And what makes this chapter seem so unpleasant, it's that Peter, he really doesn't hold back one bit from throwing all that he has at these false teachers to accuse and condemn their actions and the way that they're influencing others. The false teachers Peter's referring to here seem to be ones who have, at some point along the line, embraced the message that Peter and other Christian leaders have brought about the saving power of Jesus. But somewhere along the line past that, they've come to misunderstand and misrepresent the message of freedom that comes with that. They've taken freedom somewhere in the sense that it's the freedom to do whatever you want or desire to do. The culture in these days and in this environment that Peter's writing into and that the New Testament emerged from was one that contained a lot of different thoughts and views about the world, about morality, and about the gods or God. A lot of these views and ways of seeing things came through the various philosophical thoughts that played a significant part in shaping that Greek and Roman culture then. There were some philosophies that insisted that God or the gods didn't have much involvement in the world. They didn't believe in divine intervention. So you need not concern yourself with seeking favor from God or worrying too much about the consequences of how you live your lives. To them, you make your own way in life. You make your own happiness. You don't rely on anything else for that. And that was the goal for some, to seek pleasure wherever you could in life, to seek pleasure to be happy. At its worst, in some of this thinking, it led to some of the people openly indulging in sexual acts in public. And it could have been viewed, I suppose, as their expression of the freedom they believed they had. And this was by no means what all of that culture looked like, or even what all the philosophical thinking led to in those days. But from what Peter is saying in his letter, it seems as though the ones he's referring to as the false teachers have somehow taken the message of freedom that God offers through Jesus, and has become combined with some of these philosophical thoughts and views on freedom that allowed people to do all sorts of things and rejected any part that God played in this world. But as Peter insists, freedom's not quite as simple as that. He says these people, he says they promise freedom, but they themselves are slaves of sin and corruption. They think they're free, and they don't realize how they're slaves to their own desires. They think they're free when they're in fact trapped in something that's actually controlling them. And it's not their desire to be free that's wrong here. God, as I said before, wants us to be free. It's that they've misunderstood and misrepresented what freedom is all about and what freedom really looks like. They're probably not even intentionally trying to lead people astray with their views and teachings about freedom. They probably genuinely believe they've got it. In the way that Peter talks to them as false teachers or false prophets in some areas, it seems they're convinced that they're speaking for God in these things. But Peter insists that they're wrong. And he warns his readers not to be influenced by these people. He warns them if they follow after these people, they'll only be turning back to the sort of life that God has in fact saved them from. He says that turning back would be worse even than if they'd never turned to God in the first place. Now, I'll take that point here for a moment and say that the life that God offers us freely, that though it's offered freely, it's certainly not something to be played around with. It's not something to be tried out for a bit just to see if it suits us or take on when it suits us. There's some real things going on in that. I don't really think we've got a major problem here with the threat of people coming in and trying to lure others away into the sort of way that Peter's dealing with here in his letter. So I won't spend too much time on that. I reckon if you get a taste of the freedom and life that comes out of God saving you from something in life or from some sort of life, then Peter's words about how much worse it'll be for you will be quite self-evident. When God gives you something as good as the life he gives us in knowing him, you're not likely to enjoy those things that you were stuck in before quite the same as you might have enjoyed them before you came to God. Instead, I'd like us this morning to look more at the new things that we can become trapped in. The new things that can be much more subtle and harder to recognize as traps. A common trap for Christians particularly can be that trap of feeling like we're just not doing enough. I've rarely come across a Christian who doesn't think that they shouldn't be doing more for God or that they should be doing better in life than what they are. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that desire to be wanting to be doing good. It's certainly a good desire to have, and it comes from a good place, a desire that's probably most likely sprung from God himself. But the state of guilt and self-criticism that often accompanies that good desire, often follows after it, it's not something that's really healthy for anyone, and it reflects anything but a person who is free. And though that feeling of guilt that we're not quite doing or being what we should be for God is often something that comes out of a desire to be doing something good, a desire to be purposeful, the negative feelings that produces or can produce are likely to only have a negative effect on us being purposeful in the way that we really desire anyway. It's strange how our desire to be purposeful can sometimes produce those feelings within us that only hinder rather than help us to do the things that we think we should be doing. It can be more crippling than empowering sometimes. Another thing we did over the holidays, Sarah and I took the opportunity to go on a retreat together, or to take one together. We've never really done anything quite like that together before, but we really wanted to try and be more intentional this year about seeking direction for the year ahead this time. We didn't want to feel like we were diving into another year blind, as we've often felt like we've done in a lot of years. It was an effort to try and be more effective in the purposes we believe God has for us this year by seeking his direction for those purposes. But as we did this over a couple of days, we broke our time at this retreat into two parts. We began by prayerfully reflecting and discussing together where it is that God has led us to now, where we are, both in our own lives and our life together. And then after that, the next day was about intentionally seeking and discerning, in light of where God has led us to, discerning then where God is leading us from here. And we had a few areas we were seeking direction for our lives in, but the main one that emerged out of the weekend had to do with our vocations in life. For me, it was about moving from that position of an intern in the church to one of a pastor, and the difference that the transition in these roles might mean, what it was supposed to look like for me and the difference it meant for my role. What do I need to do different this year? There's something. Because like anyone else, or like everyone else, I'd say at times, I often have those feelings like I'm just not doing enough, or I'm not being quite what I need to be. You know what God's response was to me out of that? His response was, "You're all right. You're all right. Don't try to do or be anything different." Those words were spoken into the other areas also I was seeking direction in, not just my role in the church. And I don't expect those words to mean to you exactly what they meant to me, but if I can just share with you a bit of what they did mean for me. For me, it was encouraging. It was affirming. I feel as if those words have given me a firm footing, the firm footing I've needed to be effective in the purposes God has for me this year. And don't get me wrong, those words, they don't give me an excuse to simply sit back and not try and grow or improve in any way in my role there. Instead, I'd say it's given me that secure place, a firm footing to grow from, because it's helped to release the pressure that probably wasn't very helpful anyway. Help to release some of that tension, maybe. You know how we know we're free? Why we're free? Trevor spoke about it before. Trevor mentioned we're free because of what Jesus has done. We're free because what God has done. We're free because, and we know we're free, because unlike those false teachers assumed that Peter was writing about, we know that God is involved. We don't have to be the ones making our own way. So we don't have to carry the pressure that making your own way in things brings with it. Because it's not free. Because God is involved, because he is involved, in many ways, it's him who's rolling out the path for us. It's up to us whether we want to trust God in that and just walk in that path that he is laying out. They promise freedom, but they themselves are slaves. For you are a slave to whatever controls you. I'm sure we all have a desire to be purposeful, to be doing something worthwhile in the world, to be doing something worthwhile as a church and in our individual lives. And whether we, whatever it is that we think we can bring to the world or offer to the world or offer in the world, whether it's as a church or individuals, and it's what each individual brings, I'd say, that will inevitably shape what we will bring as a church. But whatever it is that we believe we can bring to the world, what we can contribute in a purposeful way, it's got to be grounded in the reality that we ourselves are free. We can't be those ones that promise freedom yet be slaves ourselves. And we need to be assured of that, of our freedom, that we are free, that we've been set free. Because the God we serve is a saving God. He's a God setting the world free from sin and from the sin and corruption that it's fallen into. Setting people free from their misguided views of what freedom is about. And setting people free from the traps they've fallen into. If we want to be part of that, part of the work of setting people free, then we ourselves need to know and experience what freedom is and protect that. We need to be experiencing the salvation ourselves. I'd say a part of that, a big part of that, an essential part of that is about making those spaces in our lives where we get the chance to see and recognize those traps that we might be falling into ourselves. Recognizing the traps that are hindering not only our purpose but smothering our freedom. Making that space to hear from God, to hear the words he has for us that set us free. Words like, "You are mine. You are my child. Don't worry. You're accepted, so quit striving." Words like, "I am here. I'm involved. It's all right. You don't have to make your own way." Because that's what salvation is really about, isn't it? It's about who God is and who we are to him. That's what sets us free from the traps we fall into in the world. And it's important that we hold on to that and be reminded again and again and hear it again and again who we are to him. Because that's what will give us that firm footing in freedom. Because it's only who we are in God and being assured of who we are in God that will ultimately shape what we can do for God in this world. Yeah. Thanks, Murray. Laura.